on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. Today's Friday, August 16th, 2024. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm here to guide you over this next hour, and we certainly have a lot to talk about. You know, I was disappointed I could not be with you all yesterday. Had a little bit of a veterinary emergency. Things are looking better now, but I'm back, and I'm ready to talk about what happened yesterday, and I'm ready to talk about what happened today. I'm ready to talk a little bit about what might happen tomorrow, the next week, the next month, and for the rest of 2024. Now, that being said, we'll run down the market performance and talk about today's show topics a little bit later on, but after we get to our first caller question now.
Hey, Justin and Luke, I had a quick question for you guys. I am looking at a stock called ACIC, Alpha Charlie, India Charlie. I would like to know what your take is and your expert opinion. Really appreciate your thoughts. Thank you so much.
So taking a look at ACIC is the ticker. That would be American Coastal Insurance Corporation. Just by looking at the relative performance, or rather the performance relative to the S&P 500 over the past 5 years, you can see that this company has come back from a lot. Back in 2021, they lost $1.35 a share. 2022, they lost $10.91 a share. Last year, they made $6.98. This year, they're projected to make $1.45. Next year, $1.55. Now, those numbers don't necessarily take into consideration extraordinary items, which may skew earnings one way or another, but the trend here is positive. Their cash flow, after flatlining in 2022, upward and to the right, pretty explosively turning positive for fiscal year 2023 and into 2024. Now, it's a $550 million market cap company. It focuses on property and casualty insurance, which tends to be a business with unexpected cash flows and with respect to the insurance sector broadly. Now, it has very little debt, which is good. It has very little cash on its balance sheet, which is fine. Its cash has dropped off from about $1 billion to maybe about $300 million now. So, yeah, $369 million as of the end of last year. But either way, we have to ask ourselves, why did this company put itself in a position where it could recover so quickly? And the answer is they took on a lot of high risk bets. They took on a lot of high risk insurance practices. They have solid reinsurance support. They have really low cost operations that have been driving their profitability. And so is now the time to buy? Well, it's up 22% year to date. It's beaten the insurance industry by quite a bit, I would say, in 2023 and into 2024. But I think the fact that it has a lot of its focus on condos, flood, renters, commercial residential property, it's difficult to say if now is a good time to buy without diving into the concentration of its policies. We have seen a lot of adverse weather events come in and knock out real estate in Texas, real estate in Florida. So it's taken on a lot of high risk, expensive premium policies to get it to where it is now. And I don't fully know the makeup of those policies. And until you see the risk that they're taking on, because it's very important with this type of business, this type of insurance business, until you can see how aggressive risk they've taken on, it's difficult to say if now is a good time to buy. Certainly the market believes it's moving in the right direction. Its short interest is only 5% right now. It issued some shares last year, but nothing too aggressive. And again, I want to emphasize it's moving in the right direction, but without diving into where its risk is concentrated within the insurance market, given that it's involved in commercial and residential properties, it's difficult for me to give a thumbs up on this one. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and here's a little bit of what we have planned for you, time permitting. My main focus point today concerns this topic: Biden's rent control proposal, what it means for landlords and tenants. President Biden's proposal aims to cap rent increases at 5% for corporate landlords or risk losing federal tax breaks. That would impact over 20 million rental units. The plan addresses concerns about excessive profits by large property owners while balancing tenant protections and housing development incentives. How could these changes reshape the rental market and influence housing affordability across the United States? We'll also talk about U.S. retail sales figures that came out yesterday and surprised to the upside and charged a market rally through Thursday that followed through a little bit today. We'll also discuss falling mortgage rates and how just because rates are coming down doesn't mean the housing issues within the housing market have been solved. So we'll dive into some of those other problems. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on some pain points within Europe and why they aren't in the clear in terms of economic growth as the United States and what that should mean for you allocating internationally. We also have some voice bank caller questions ready to play, including one on FF, which is Future Fuel Corp, one word, and one on ABBV, which is ABV Inc. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Just give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Now we're going into a short break. And on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions either live or from the Invest Talk voice bank at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Well, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc. It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART. Luke Guerrero is here and ready to take on your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
Now let's run down today's market activity and talk a little bit about what happened broadly this week. U.S. stocks finished higher today. The S&P and NASDAQ rose for the seventh straight session. Major indices logged strong weekly gains as well. The Dow up 24 basis points today. S&P 500 large caps up 20 basis points. NASDAQ 21 basis points. Russell 2000 small caps up 30 basis points. Today's top performers looks like banks and insurers did well. Credit cards did well. Retail doing well again on the back of retail sales yesterday. Underperformers looks like energy, airlines, semis, building products. Steel didn't fare particularly well today. Gold finished up almost 2%, 1.8%, logging a new all-time high. I'm sure we'll run down those numbers and how that relates to past gold prices a little bit later on. Crude oil settled down at 2%, notching its fifth weekly decline of the past 6 weeks. It was a quiet session overall, I'd say, though stocks continued their recent upward trend. A lot of talk about much cleaner positioning following that post Bank of Japan drawdown, that yen carry trade drawdown. While most recent commentary has kind of pointed out that systematic funds are flipping back towards buying with the help of volatility kind of retreating over the past week or so. July housing starts came in well below consensus, the lowest monthly level since May of 2020, and June revised lower as well. Permits also missed, if you took a look at that report. The preliminary August University of Michigan consumer sentiment came in ahead of consensus on stronger expectations components. That certainly drove the market as well. And in terms of Fed speak, Goolsbee on NPR this morning cautioned that the labor market always has the potential to worsen quickly. Some pretty dovish comments that hint even further towards the Fed's likelihood to cut in September. Rounding out the week on a bullish side, the market found further support for its soft landing narrative, I would say, with retail sales and jobless claims, disinflation traction from the PPI and CPI report, as well as the inflation expectations report, and some pushback against concerns about softening in consumer spending, looking at Walmart's earnings call and forward-looking guidance. Fed speak, as I mentioned, leaning dovish, both Bostic and Goolsbee flagging the risks of moving too late or too slowly in terms of rate cuts, and the VIX coming down pretty substantially, 40 points from its intraday peak on August 5th. Also, some favorable flow trends continued. This is the seventh straight week of inflows to U.S. equities and the seventh straight week of inflows to global equities. Now, on the bearish side, the Fed eased its expectations for this year. The Fed rate cut expectations now below 100 basis points late this week, down from 130 basis points on August 5th, though that might have been some market overreaction, I would say. Core CPI came in a bit cooler than expected, but shelter inflation reversed its trend, certainly something to keep an eye on. Atlanta Fed's GDP Now tracker also showed further slowing. It predicted a Q3 GDP of 2.4%, down from 2.9% last month, and there's still concerns because of this about a slowing economy. Next week's a pretty quiet week overall, though FOMC minutes come out on Wednesday, so we'll certainly be paying attention to that. Now, shifting gears back to the InvestTalk comment section question bank, here's one that came in earlier. This one on PRU. It says, what do you think of PRU? What price target would you give it by the end of the year? So PRU, while I pull this up, is Prudential Financial Services. They're a full freight financial services company. They do insurance, they do annuities, they do health insurance, they do life insurance, all sorts of insurance products. And certainly they've had a pretty good year so far relative to the industry, pretty in line with the industry, up 10% this year, up 23% in the past 52 weeks. They're trading currently at a price to book of about 1.4, which is kind of high. You typically see these insurance companies trading at about their book value, and that's just because of the nature of their business overall. But Prudential's a pretty big player. It's one of the largest players, and it's pretty well positioned to cash in on some pretty massive, and maybe I should stop saying pretty, massive retirement opportunities going forward. They sell annuities. And though annuities tend to be expensive and not necessarily for everybody, there's certainly more complex ways that you can deal with cash flow matching that aren't annuities, though some people like the security. Given that, they have a lot of opportunity here. And one thing that's benefiting them recently, they announced a $2 billion share buyback program. That certainly bolstered the stock a little bit a couple weeks ago. In terms of debt, they only have about $27 billion of debt on a $40 billion market cap company, so nothing too crazy. And that share buyback program is one in a long line of share buyback programs. They've been buying back shares pretty consistently since 2020, to be honest. Their cash flow has been pretty stable over the past 3 years. Their profitability has been improving. Their net income has been improving as well. They actually had negative net income in 2022, but that was just one off year. Sometimes that happens with these insurance companies. I would say overall, I think the demographics in this country, in terms of an aging population and in terms of the baby boomers and in retirement and how many people are going to be retired going forward, or as soon as, you know, or rather the quickness in terms of retirement in the demographics of the United States, kind of provide a unique business opportunity for Prudential, who I would say is more of an income play. Dividend yield 4.58%. Its dividend yield between 4% and 4.5%, pretty consistently over the past 5 years. Payout ratio is 74. That's a little high, but it still has room to grow. And so I would say with a company that's buying back its shares, a company that has a very stable business, and a company that can take advantage of the demographic changes in the United States, I think it's pretty well positioned at a pretty affordable price. 8x forward-looking price to earnings, about its average price to book. A little high, but about its average. So overall, I'd give the thumbs up on Prudential. I like Prudential. I like what they have going for them. I like how they can take advantage, not in a bad way, but capture some more market due to the aging demographics in the United States and beyond. Thanks for the call. Let's play another question from the InvestTalk Voice Bank that came in earlier.
Hello, Justin and Luke. I was calling in today to get your thoughts on the stock ADB. The symbol is ABBV. I wanted to see what would be good entry point, or may probably just wait for a downturn. I'll be listening to the answer on your show. Thanks so much.
So ABV, always a difficult one to say, I believe, at least for me, is ticker ABBV. It's a pharmaceutical company. It's a biopharmaceutical company. They have an interesting pipeline potentially going forward in that they are one of the companies that is looking to take advantage of psychedelic drugs and psychedelic adjacent drugs. And so that's them getting ahead of the curve before you did see some deregulation, decriminalization in some parts of the United States. Now, AbbVie, their cash flow kind of fell off a cliff in 2023. That's not something that is a good mark for them in terms of if I think it's a good time to invest. And their net margins have been compressing from about 20% the past couple of years down to 8.9% last year. Now, it's set to recover at 34.7%, but I hear the music, which means we're heading into a break, and we will pick this back up when we come back. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your questions, so give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. Invest Talk. Call anytime. 888-99-CHART.
Before the break, we were talking about AbbVie, ticker ABBV. And I think one thing I hadn't mentioned yet, which is important to note about this company, is in 2022, it hit a patent cliff with Humira, which is a rheumatoid arthritis medication, which I think was brought in $21 billion for this company. And regardless, in spite of that, revenue is still really didn't take much of a dent. And that's because they have a pretty decent back bench of products that have stepped up when Humira passed over the patent cliff. And that's the biggest problem with some pharmaceutical companies is patents expire, exclusivity expires, and then you lose big revenue drivers. That's just how it works. And so the fact that it really didn't even lose a step, now margins compressed a little bit, but it didn't really lose a step overall in terms of the top line. Revenue still in the 50s of billions of dollars. And so with that in mind, and with some of the opportunities it has on the horizon, with the fact that it's a pretty consistent and stable dividend payer, in spite of where cash flow is moving, I would say that AbbVie is still a good company going forward. If you're looking at these, looking to get into pharmaceutical companies, certainly its chart suggests that as well, up 25% this year, up 27% year to date. I don't think it's overly expensive. It's a little expensive. It's trading at 16 times forward-looking price to earnings. I'd probably wait for that to come down to maybe 13, 14 times price to earnings. Price to book is not a good thing to look at for some pharmaceutical companies because it's very difficult to price and value patents without acquisition of companies. So overall, great company. I would wait for it to come down a little bit in terms of its forward-looking price to earnings and price to cash flow, though. Keep it on the watch list. Thanks for the call. Now, my main focus point today is about an interesting proposal out of the White House, and that's Biden's rent control proposal and what it means for landlords and for tenants. Now, President Biden has introduced a plan aimed at curbing the soaring costs of housing in the United States. And so let's break down the key components and potential impacts of this proposal. Under the new proposal, corporate landlords who own 50 or more units would be required to cap annual rent increases at 5%, or face the loss of valuable federal tax incentives. Now, this measure targets the larger landlords who, according to the administration, are significantly raising rents and reaping substantial profits at the expense of tenants. These landlords currently benefit from several tax deductions, which could be impacted if they do not comply with the new rent cap. Now, this proposal has sparked, I would say, immediate criticism from various industry groups who argue that introducing what they view as rent control could lead to negative outcomes such as discouraging investment in new rental properties and maybe even reducing the overall housing supply. Essentially, the criticism is you're attacking this from the wrong side. Now, the rent cap proposal is part of a broader effort by the Biden administration to address housing affordability and who can rent and where they can rent or buy homes. Other initiatives include protections for renters and multifamily properties overseen by the FHFA, such as mandatory 30-day notices for rent increases and lease expirations, and 5-day grace periods for late rent payments. Now, in addition to targeting rental markets, the administration proposes incentives for homebuyers and homeowners. For instance, a new mortgage relief credit would offer a $5,000 annual tax credit for 2 years to eligible middle-class first-time homebuyers. There's also a proposed one-year tax credit of up to $10,000 for middle-class families who sell their starter home to another owner-occupant. Now, as this debate unfolds, particularly with an upcoming election, Vice President Harris has already announced a different plan that kind of piggybacks off this, though it is more broad in terms of, or rather it opens the purse more in terms of what is being offered for first-time homeowner, home purchaser credits. But as this debate unfolds in the shadow of an election, discussions about the best method to balance the needs of renters, landlords, and the broader housing market will certainly intensify. I don't fully disagree with all of this. Certainly, I think the basic core of it, the having to notify somebody in advance of raising your rent is probably a good protection that doesn't really cost anything. 5-day grace periods, generally speaking, are pretty, aren't very costly. I have a 5-day grace period and I live in a, large corporate owned landlord apartment. So I think those are fine. But the root cause of the issue here is supply. We have not built enough houses. We have not built enough apartments in this country. Santa Monica, California, right on the other side of the freeway for me, is one of the most expensive areas in this country. It is also illegal in that city to build above a certain height. The homelessness crisis in California is directly due to massive income inequality and the lack of affordable housing. So I think they have the right idea at looking at this as a problem. Because maybe in general, we should shift our precious resources away from subsidizing large corporate landlords at all, and instead put the money where it should be. Subsidizing building, 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 building. We'll touch about this later on and why lowering rates is not going to solve the housing crisis. And that's because the issue is a supply issue. We need to, in this country, build more houses. It helps people try and achieve the American dream, that white picket fence that everybody wants. Now we're moving into a break and I welcome your questions. Feel free to give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Whether you're starting or scaling your company's security program, demonstrating top-notch security practices and establishing trust is more important than ever. Vanta automates compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more, saving you time and money while helping you build customer trust. Plus, you can streamline security reviews by automating questionnaires and demonstrating your security posture with a customer-facing trust center, all powered by Vanta AI. Over 7,000 global companies like Atlassian, Flow Health, and Quora use Vanta to manage risk and prove security in real time. Get $1,000 off Vanta when you go to vanta.com/go. That's vanta.com/go for $1,000 off.
The weekend is here or almost here, but you've got finance and investment questions. So step up and call in. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Steve from St. Paul. Love the show. I'm calling about biofuels. I actually have positions in both FF, Future Fuel, and REX, American Resources, REX. They both, to me, have pretty good fundamentals. Future Fuel might be better, and it's certainly been on a tear recently, but it also seems to have some management challenges, and they're both tiny, and Future Fuel's micro. So curious what you think about the space and then both of those names. Thanks in advance.
So let's take a look at one of these. We'll take a look at Future Fuel because you said it first. And Future Fuel is a biodiesel company. It's a chemical company out of St. Louis, Missouri. It is very small, $267 million market cap, but it has no debt at all whatsoever. It used to have $1 million. Now it has $0 million. And I think generally speaking, their picture looks, I'd say, rosy. Operating cash flow has been improving. You see, they started to diverge from the S&P 500 in terms of performance around 2020, though, is to be expected. The world shut down, and so chemical companies didn't necessarily do as well. But it's done pretty well over the past 3 months, up 23%, and its sales growth has, you know, kind of improved, been a little stagnant. But I think primarily here the issue is that this is a demand-driven business, right? For their products, it is a demand-driven economy. And so I would expect that for a lot of these chemical companies, for a lot of materials companies, there to be a pickup coming into and through 2025. And given its balance sheet is pretty stellar, again, no debt. It's got a little bit of cash on its balance sheet, about $219 million, which is nearly its market cap. But still, it's trading right now at a price book of about 1.2. And so as demand picks up, given how small it is, how it can lever up a little bit, frankly, I would like to see some leverage on this balance sheet. It looks to me that their cash flow is in a position where they might be able to handle it now. And so as demand starts to pick back up, companies like this are going to start to do very well, especially ones that don't have to service massive amounts of debt and ones that are operating with very low leverage and have the ability to lever up into the demand. I mean, their margin was 10% last year. So pretty well run business overall. It's certainly been on a tear. I give it a thumbs up. Just keep in mind, it's very small, so there are lots of risks. Thanks for the call. On Friday, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers, so let me hit you with that list right now. The two-year Treasury yield was at 4.069% today. For perspective, last week, that number was at 4.057. 2 weeks back, that was 3.882, and 40 weeks ago, it was 5.05. The 10-year yield was at 3.898. Last week, it was 3.946. 40 weeks back, it was 4.63. 134 weeks ago, that was 1.762. Gold reaching an all-time high today, priced at $24.99 per ounce. Couldn't quite make it to $2,500. Last week, that number is $24.28. 40 weeks back, $19.35. 128 weeks ago, $18.06. Silver was at $28.78 per ounce today. Last week, that number was $27.49. 26 weeks ago, $22.80. And 120 weeks ago, the number was $23.94. Oil was selling for $76.86 per barrel today. Last week, that number was $76.80. 36 weeks ago, that number was $74.30. And 136 weeks ago, $66.62. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.43 per gallon, a 2-cent decrease over last week. 63 weeks ago, it was $3.56. 111 weeks ago, $4.25. And 131 weeks ago, $3.57. In California, it was averaging $4.60 per gallon, same as last week. 42 weeks ago, that was $5.32, and 118 weeks ago, $5.87. For comparison, in the state of Illinois, gas was averaging $3.83 per gallon. That is 77 cents less per gallon than gas in California. Now, speaking of spending, because we got to buy gas, let's talk about consumer spending. Data released yesterday showed a robust surge in U.S. retail sales and a pretty impressive performance by Walmart, suggesting that fears of an imminent recession might be overblown. Now, in July, retail sales saw a significant jump, increased by 1%, the most substantial rise in a year and a half, and well above the 30 basis point increase economists had anticipated. Now, this spike in consumer spending is clearly an indicator of further resilience beyond what people expected and comes on the back of a worrisome, though, as I contended previously, possibly overblown jobs report, given the dynamics of what is causing unemployment, mostly temporary unemployment due to natural disasters. Now, adding to the positive outlook, shares in Walmart, the world's largest retailer, surged by 8% following its announcement of a 4.2% year-on-year increase in same store sales at its principal U.S. stores. The retail giant also raised its annual profit forecast, signaling strong consumer activity, Walmart CEO noted in an analyst call that they aren't experiencing a weaker consumer overall. Additional data released showed weekly initial jobless claims, also at 227,000, lower than both consensus forecasts and the previous week's revised figures. U.S. stocks rose. Government bonds sold off on the news pretty broadly. That continued today. Coming off of a high inflation surprising to the downside, I would say that the sales and labor data certainly will help stave off shorter and medium-term fears of an impending recession. It doesn't say the economy is heating up. You should not interpret the data this way. Instead, it kind of shows the cooling at a reasonable and not terrifying pace. So now all eyes can be on the Fed. And you saw that with recent Fed speak on Thursday. You saw it with more Fed speak today. And it shows that they're starting to shift focus from one of their mandates, which is dealing with inflation, towards the other, thinking about unemployment. And so for what it's worth, the market has adjusted its expectations accordingly, scaling back bets on larger half-point rate cuts in the coming months. I told you that earlier that now the market anticipates fewer than 100 basis points of cuts. And so the robust data, I would say, underscores that the U.S. economy is in far better shape than a lot of people thought it would be. And so a necessity, as U.S. consumers continue to demonstrate their spending resilience, it's kind of unnecessary to have drastic cuts. So despite the inflationary pressures over the past couple of years, in spite of all that, the strength of the consumer, the strength of the economy, I would say the economic outlook looks increasingly optimistic. Now that can change, that can certainly change, but either way, the stage is set for rate cuts in September. I think you can, the Fed has seen all that it needs to see, and I wouldn't be surprised to see a more forceful dovish turn, probably from the minutes out of next week, and certainly at the next meeting as well. Now let's grab another listener question, this one from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, gentlemen. I'm calling about stock Colbert, Kravis, Robertson Company, ticker symbol KKR. Just wanted to hear your thoughts. Thank you, and have a good weekend.
KKR is a investment manager. Maybe alternative assets, capital markets, they're a pretty big player in the business. Certainly, most people have heard about KKR, I would say, if you were in the world of finance. I would worry, is you need a K1 for KKR? Let me just find this real quick before we dive in. I think it's possible that KKR issues K1s, and therefore it kind of can be complex for tax considerations. I think before you look to invest in KKR, you might want to dig into that, how they are structured. But regardless, I think that KKR faces some of the same issues as a private equity business that a lot of businesses are facing, though not as much as traditional asset managers, your Vanguards of the world, and that fee compression hasn't happened as much. But I would still worry, and I think we bring this to the show pretty often, about some of the issues surrounding some of the private investments that they have, be it private debt, private credit investments, and that has certainly become a big part of their offerings recently because you saw some pretty big returns in the past couple of years. But regardless, the revenue growth is pretty solid over the five-year time frame, from $2.9 billion in 2018 to $16 billion in 2023. That's an average growth of 41%. Now, that being said, it can be kind of sporadic because their investments are not always liquid, not always structured in a way that you see revenue from all their investments year over year. And their net margins are exactly what you'd expect of a finance company in this line of work. 53% in 2018, 32% last year, projected to be 58% this year. And again, this is a very cyclical business. It's a very, very cyclical business. And I would say that it's a good business. It certainly is a good business. I like private equity firms because they, especially ones that are as established as this, if you can ride out the cyclicality of the business, you can certainly get good returns by investing in them. But it's trading pretty expensive for a financial firm. 5x price to book, 21 times forward-looking price to earnings, 12 times cash flow. It's a little cheap, but still, 21 times forward-looking price to earnings for this company. I would wait for it to come down to about 15. Either way, I think you have to understand the risks, potentially the tax issues around owning a name like this. Again, I don't know. I just seem to remember that potentially you'd have to file a K-1. You'd get a K-1 for KKR. So I would look into that. But good business, a little expensive right now. if you can deal with the potential tax implications, I keep it on my watch list for now. Thanks for the call. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP Premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week in the KPP Insight section, we discussed private credit. What a great segue from KKR. What is private credit? What are the risks of private credit? Is it a good idea that more and more companies are using shadow banking financing? I know it sounds dubious. It's not as dubious as it sounds, but it's far less regulated than public credit. So what are some of the systemic risks potentially in the market? What does it mean? We'll talk about all of that. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a manufacturing company and a retail company, probably a good company to mention given the retail sales figures yesterday. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on capital markets and money flow. If you're interested in learning more, visit us at investtalk.com. Hit subscribe. The newsletter comes to your inbox every Saturday morning. Let's dip back into the InvestTalk YouTube question bank. This one from Jimmy Gustafsson. Jimmy's from Sweden. It says, what do you guys think of the company Argan, AGX? I think it specializes in building and designing power facilities that use both traditional and new energy sources. The numbers in the balance sheet look fine for the company, I think. Do you have more info, and what are your opinions on the company? Well, you are correct. Argan is a builder of power systems, which is, I think, one of the sometimes lesser thought about aspects of where you can invest given the quote unquote AI revolution. And so they, through their wholly owned subsidiaries, build telecommunications infrastructure, power infrastructure. And so, as you'd expect, as more companies are spending more money on these advanced models, you have to power it. There is going to be a large increase in demand for electricity. There already has been a large increase in demand for electricity, and that demand will only continue going forward. Even with, you know, originally what was priced into this and what was thought about was electric vehicles. Now, electric vehicles have certainly taken a step back in terms of where a lot of people projected they would be at this point. Car companies moving back towards hybrids, plug-in hybrids, but still with that, that's going to be increased demand for electricity as well. And this company actually reported a strong project backlog, which is good. It means they haven't fully been able to utilize all of the business that they have garnered. And so that's another good aspect as well. And so when you look at this company, you see its sales revenue growth is really picked up again in last 2 years from $455 million projected to be $778 million this year. Their margins are about where you'd expect this business to be, about 6 to 7% pretty consistently. And so the question becomes, with it running up 82% over the past 52 weeks, 56% this year, how expensive is it? Really not too expensive. 18 times price to earnings, price to book 3.3 times, price to cash flow 7.3 times, pretty below the industry average. And so given what the company has already said about its backlog of business, given the revenue growth you've seen over the past couple of years, given that it's pretty cheap, I'd have to give it a thumbs up. Thanks for watching. Now we're moving into our last break. So if you want to call in live, you have to do it now. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Got a question for Justin or Luke? You're the best person to ask it.
Quick question. What are some signs of that a recession is coming?
Is there any lesson for people who own stocks, even if they don't short a stock, that the stock they own, they should know whether it's been heavily shorted?
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
If this gets to 170 to 175 in that range, that's where I'd pick it up.
Awesome. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate it.
I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA. Curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere.
I'm a new investor, and your podcast has helped me out a lot.
Call InvestTalk,
888-99-CHART or post your questions on the InvestTalk YouTube channel.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, this is Will in San Diego, and I'm looking at ticker symbol AMLP and wonder if this is a good investment. Thanks.
So AMLP is an energy infrastructure ETF, and it looks like they do a market cap weighting. Most of the cash flow from midstream activities involving energy commodities. And interestingly enough, it looks like they can only hold 25% of their portfolio in MLPs, but the structure introduces a layer of taxation that prevents it from passing through the full return of its underlying index. So what it's saying is there's a little bit of shareholder distribution that is tax deferred. So if you're trying to get into energy infrastructure, looks like there's some tax advantages, or at least they're saying there are some tax advantages to holding this ETF. And remember, ETFs are already inherently tax advantaged because of how they operate, right? It's not like mutual funds where you buy in, you redeem shares in the mutual fund, and then the fund itself has to sell equities or sell bonds, and then every shareholder is responsible for the capital gains. ETFs work through authorized purchasers, and so the only person that is bearing the cost of the taxable event is the person who's actually redeeming. So it looks like there's another layer of taxation on there, or tax advantage on there. It's an $8 billion fund, pretty big, pretty well diversified across the market cap spectrum, though. Again, if it's just market cap weighted, that's just how the industry is overall. 75% in midstream energy companies, exactly what they say they are. 54% large caps, 38% mid caps, 11% small caps. It's got 16 holdings because it's probably not that many midstream LPs out there. 1 year return, 24% though, again. Past return is not indicative of future results. And they do it for an expense ratio of about 85 basis points. So I imagine just because of the structure of the holdings they have, there's complexity there. And so 85 basis points, even though it's a bunch of U.S. stocks, is probably reasonable, especially given the tax benefits. So here's an interesting one. Typically, I don't give the thumbs up on funds that ETFs specifically that are that expensive, because this one is kind of expensive. 85 is a lot. But I think I would say dig in a little bit and see if you personally benefit from the potential tax deferred savings of this fund, and you want to get investment into a broader array of energy infrastructure MLPs, I think it's a pretty good way to do it. Thanks for the call. Before we head off into the weekend, let's talk about mortgage rates. And that's because mortgage rates in the U.S. have hit their lowest point in over a year. But for many Americans, the dream of homeownership is still out of reach. Despite this dip, rates are still far from the low levels seen before the Federal Reserve's rate hikes began in 2022. But the current economic climate, coupled with high home prices and limited inventory, continues to challenge prospective home buyers. Essentially, it's more than just rates. And though it will become beneficial for wannabe home buyers if rates move down, certainly just the math of that makes sense. But it's more about sustained low rates that will impact market affordability, resetting certain prices. Last week, the average rate on a standard 30-year fixed mortgage fell below 6.5%, marking the sharpest annual decline that we've seen in quite some time. Mortgage bankers seem to be optimistic as well, hoping the lower rates will revive buyer and seller activity. But the transition isn't that simple. Many homeowners who secured a low rate before the hikes are hesitant to sell. You have to look at the makeup, right? Most home purchases were done before the rate increase. That's why interest rates didn't necessarily affect consumers as much. Most of their debt is locked into a mortgage, those golden handcuffs. And so as you see rates come down, yeah, there are going to be people who want to come in and be first-time home buyers, but you can't buy a home if nobody is selling it. So that leads us back to what I said before. The problem is the supply. We have to build more homes in this country. Hopefully we do. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads that they can get at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Be sure if you get us on iTunes to rate and review. I hope you've heard about our Invest Talk podcast also being available in video form on our YouTube channel. You can see my beard. It's really growing now. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.